Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. I'm glad that you join us every Sunday at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m. You know that we stream live at richarddugan.com and newspress.com. We also archive these programs at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page, and we also link to our guests. I will be giving you the website to our guests' information as we continue here on the program. Today's program is... It's fueled naturally. There are no artificial additives or preservatives. The energy that you hear us using here is our own and not manufactured, at least not in the mechanized, civilized world. And we're going to talk about that in regards to instant health. We're going to talk about the five keys to unlimited energy and vitality with the book's author, Dr. Marilyn Joyce, PhD, RD. And you're referred to as the Vitality Doctor. Welcome to the program.
I'm so thrilled to be here, Richard. This is just awesome to be both in a studio and in a beautiful city.
Well, it ain't bad both ways.
Right.
I'm glad you're here. It's always nice to have people in studio to chat with face to face.
Yes.
I know that the whole subject of staying energetic and vital and vibrant throughout our entire lifetime becomes more and more of a challenge as we get older.
Yes.
And a lot of times that's due, the loss of energy is due to conditions that start to come up due to the fact that maybe we didn't do quite as good a job in the early days of caring for ourselves as we should have.
Yeah.
And now we're doing sort of catch up instead of preventative. Now we're doing repair work.
Yes.
Sometimes we've taken very good care of ourselves through the early years. And we're still doing repair work. Maybe that's due to our genetics.
You know, part of getting older.
Just part the process.
Yeah, it's part of the process.
In this world of heading towards, as my father has he's always reminded me. He says, "Eat, drink, and be merry, because nobody gets out of this world alive."
Well,
so
that's
enjoy
true.
Yourself while you're here. But he always used the word in moderation.
That's right.
You know.
Yep.
And I have to say that some of the news that's out there is kind of scary in respect to trying to find those substances, I'll use that term right now, that we can ingest that aren't going to cause us to deteriorate faster than we naturally would if we were getting substances that were, shall we say, not contaminated, not altered, and so on and so forth. Now, here's the part of the problem, though. And when organic first started coming out, and my wife just wanted to buy organic, if it said organic on it, you were going to buy organic. And now, and I told her this then, and I said, I told you, they can put a label on anything. And now they're finding that there are some strawberries that are, I think, here in California, that have been irradiated or injected with something, blah, and they're labeled organic.
Yeah, they might grow them organically, but then they irradiate them to give them longevity.
They undo
the good.
The whole thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And what makes it even worse is here in California, anyway, I don't know about the rest of the country, we had a struggle with the GMO issue.
Trying to
get the GMO producers of products to label them as such.
Yeah.
And they said no, and they went to court, and the court said no. So they did the next best thing. They said, fine, if you're not going to label yours GMO, we're going to label ours non-GMO.
Right.
So at least people know the difference. And I guess my biggest challenge with all of this, not just the one thing, but all of this stuff, is if you can't trust the manufacturers and the producers, it seems to me that you need to move next door to a farmer who is growing his crops organically. Get permission from him to go in and pick throughout the seasons, your various bits and pieces of produce, that you know how they were grown, by whom they were grown, et cetera, et cetera. Or have your own farm, have your own garden, and never go to the grocery store again. Farmers markets are a good thing, too.
Yeah, farmers markets are great. The thing, though, at a farmers market is you've got to make sure that you get to know the farmers who are there and become friends with them. And don't jump on the bandwagon right away and ask, is it organic? Because you're going to put their defense up, you know. So the key is to, you know, get to know them. And then as time goes on, they get to know who you are, and they'll tell you what they have that's in line with what you want.
Now, this is having to do primarily with the substances that we ingest, but this whole aspect of, and I find it interesting that you've termed it or titled it instant energy.
Yeah.
Because that's what our culture seems to want right now. I mean, we got those little tin cans, aluminum cans of various names for all of these energy drinks and power drinks and this and that and the other that'll give you that 1 or 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 hour boost.
And then a crash.
And then a crash.
Yeah.
But if we were eating and consuming those things that were good for our bodies, then we wouldn't even need that. Subsequently, we eliminate the crash.
Exactly.
Now, my wife and I were talking about this, and I want to talk about this with you in terms of having the kind of vitality that we would like to have throughout our entire lives.
Yeah.
And it's really a shame. I'm not so much angry and upset and frustrated as I am disappointed, saddened and disappointed that we can't trust the people who provide us with the grocery store supplies that we need to be. And I'm thinking, so if you know that's good, are you feeding this stuff to your family? Are you eating this stuff?
Yeah.
You know, manufacturer.
Right.
Mr. and Mrs. Manufacturer. Are you? And I often wonder, too, because I used to get on the bandwagon against the oil companies when the prices were so high. Are you forcing your mom to pay this price, or does she have to pay the $5 a gallon in California or, whatever? So it's like it's almost as if our culture has extracted the humanity.
It's a double standard
out of
that's going
living.
On. Yeah.
And to what end? For what purpose? That's the frustration.
Interestingly, Richard, this was something that happened, I think, probably about 10 years ago now. I attend a lot of events for health professionals that are held at the various universities, such as UCLA.
Mm-hmm.
And this particular event, they had one of the key people from the FDA there. And his response was, he was very fit looking, a little short guy, but very fit looking. And he said, let me tell you, this fit body that you're seeing was not the result of what we produce. If what we produce is not for health, it's for money, profit. And he stood up there in front of the room and said that. And so for all of us who were sitting there, we're thinking, okay, the FDA, who we're supposed to trust, and it's not just the FDA, but it's all of those aspects or parts of the government and the industry that are really in it for profit. I mean, definitely the pharmaceutical companies are in their roles for profit. The manufacturers, the big agri, it's all about profit. And so if they can make a lot more crops, sell it for cheaper and get it out there and make bigger amounts of money, that's what they're going to go for. It really does come down to us, the individual, to take responsibility. And yes, we could grow our own, although that would be challenging for many of us, right?
Yeah.
Or we can go to farmers markets. The other option is co-ops. There are lots of organizations. I mean, the whole Northwest is co-ops.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing how those function so well for the communities that are involved in them. So that's another option as well. And then the other option is, at this point in time, there are lots of farmers where you can actually order your organic produce to be shipped to you overnight, and it costs almost the same as if you went to the grocery store and bought it, but you're getting it picked right out of the garden or off the tree the day before.
Yeah, I'm seeing these commercials now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Unfortunately, not so much unfortunately, I was a member of this one website called Graze, G-R-A-Z-E.
Oh, okay.
And they provide these little plastic containers with a peel-off lid with all kinds of supposedly natural and so forth. And my problem was that the diversity was not there. And a lot of the stuff they sent me, I really didn't care for. And yes, you can go through and you select what you want,
right,
mostly. But a lot of it just really, I just didn't care much for. I thought, nah, we'll pass. Maybe I'll go back later. But, you know,
right.
But I've seen these other things where you actually get these food boxes.
Oh, yeah. They're great.
You know. And, yeah, you probably are going to pay a little bit more than you might.
Not much, if and at times less.
Yeah.
It depends on the season, Richard. Yeah. That was the thing that was shocking to me, because I actually do receive food in that that manner. And when we compared what it cost to go to Whole Foods or one of those health stores, even Trader Joe's, to this box of produce that I get, about the same price. And the produce is much fresher because it's literally picked the day before and shipped to you.
I'll have to check into that, because I know that now, coming from a more of a physics or quantum physics perspective, and we've discussed this on the program in the past, if everything is energy, and I mean everything, my question is, then what difference does it make what we eat? If it's all energy...
Oh, but there's low energy and high energy things.
That's where we're going here.
Yeah. It's like if you look at a piece of fruit or a piece of, you know, or a vegetable, there's a much greater amount of, or higher frequency is what I'm trying to say. There's an actual higher frequency when they measure the frequency of it. There's a higher frequency in raw, fresh produce by far than there is in, say, a cooked piece of meat. Or if you were to take an apple and make it into apple chips. No comparison in energetic frequency that's provided by them. It's dead food when it's cooked and baked and processed to death. It's basically dead food. Now, I'm not saying you're not going to get some energy from some of that food. I mean, there's sugar. You know, it turns to sugar in your bloodstream if it's not already sugar. And most of those junk foods are sugar. Even if they're healthy forms of junk food, they're still overprocessed. The more processing that's done to the food, the less value there is to it on every level.
I was producing a program back in the 80s back in Phoenix. It was a health program with a chiropractor who was the host. And unlike this situation where we're face-to-face, there's no glass between us. He and I had a big sheet of glass, and he was in a separate room, and he could see me and I could see him. And he was chatting away about, you know, eating healthfully, and, you know, you need to find all of the good things. And even to this day, this particular item is one I still enjoy, not as much, but I still enjoy it. And so I grabbed it and I put it up to the glass and I said, this, you know, not on the air, but just, you know, pointing to it. It was a Snickers bar. And he on the air says, no, Richard, it's not a Snickers bar. You know. Okay, so how do we, because for example, when this is over, I'm going to go get some lunch. But I'm not going to know where to go to get something that is going to be halfway decent and good for me. I certainly don't necessarily, I don't want to disparage any businesses, mind you, but I don't necessarily want to go to a fast, quote unquote, fast food place.
No.
But it's like, if I go to a local restaurant, unless I've got a coupon or something, it gets kind of expensive in that regard.
Yeah.
There is a little market across the street, but and they have a little cooking thing in the back. I can't even think of the name of it now. Kitchen. Thank you.
Yes,
kitchen.
A kitchen.
In the back that they will cook for you. They have a menu and so forth, and you can get different ethnic foods, not just a Mexican or American, but I think there's even a sort of Middle Eastern.
Oh,
I think
they're
falafels and some other stuff like that. The names escape me.
Right.
But I get kind of, I don't want to say depressed, but it's kind of like I look around at all of the places I could go and say, but should I? And then I'll just end up turning around. I'll come back to the station and I'll just grab my bottle of water and I'll drink it and I won't have lunch.
Another idea, and this is something I teach my patients, quite honestly, Richard, because it's like a substitute for that kind of food. You know, like you go through, and whether it's fast food or mom and pop, it's generally speaking overprocessed food overall. And I know there are some really good restaurants in Santa Barbara. That's one of the things I love about here is that there are some good restaurants, but they are pricey. And so to beat the price crunch and to get something really healthy, go to a store and buy some veggies, a container of hummus, you know, some salad that's already ready to eat. You know, you can get all of that stuff readily available at even most grocery stores.
Even at, say, the name brand grocery stores,
even
like
at the
Ralph's,
brand.
The Vaughn's, the et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Ralph's actually shocked me because years ago they didn't have any organic, and I lived in Los Angeles at the time, and right in the heart of Los Angeles, and there was a Ralph's store there, and I would have my patients and my clients as well as myself go in and say, if you had more organic here, I'd shop here more often. And we were like broken records. Finally, I came home from a trip and a speaking tour, and I can't remember what store. It wasn't Whole Foods at the time, but whatever health food store was locally available, Wild Oats or something, was closed. It was too late. I headed into Ralph's very begrudgingly, and lo and behold, they had a huge segment or section that was organic. And since then, they have actually expanded. They have more organic than almost any of the other stores of that nature, other than Costco.
Okay. You know, but now we go back to the example of the organic strawberries.
Yeah.
Now what do we do?
Well, you know, that's where it's a little bit of a, excuse the expression, crapshoot, you know. It's like, you know, you really struggle with that. And, you know, that's where I probably personally would stay away from things like strawberries at Ralph's, just because I don't trust them completely. I'd go for a store that's part of the consortium that is that tries to honor that kind of thing. So that would be like
Whole Foods, Sprouts, Lazy Acres,
Trader Joe's,
yes,
They're part of a consortium, and that's the big thing. The one thing I love about going to the Natural Products Expo every year is that I learn about who's involved and who's not. And if they don't, if they break down and don't follow the rules, they'll get their ass kicked out of the business, out of the consortium.
Yeah. Now, with that being said, would it also behoove us in the organic section to make sure that to hopefully avoid some of the gimmicks, that we try to stay with the seasonal fruits and vegetables?
Absolutely.
Because I'm seeing these commercials right now, and this is really funny. On demand is all I get. That's how I get all of my television. And I'm seeing these commercials for Mexican avocados. Because now they say, we can have those year-round.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know how much you know about animal physiology or biology per se, but I was listening to a program and they were talking specifically about dogs and maybe even cats. And that their diet has to stay pretty much the same throughout their lives because their jaw, their teeth and so forth, but also the digestive system adjusts. This was the example. You know how they say don't give dogs chicken bones? Well, if you do that early in the life of a dog, and these aren't huge bones or anything, their system will adjust and accommodate. And so you keep doing that over the years, and they're fine. Now, if you do that when they're 5 or 6 or 7, you might kill them.
Right, exactly.
Because their system's not adjusted.
Exactly.
But the human physiology and biology is such that, if I'm understanding correctly, and I'll have you expound on this, the whole, shall we say, reason for the seasons is to grow different things so that as the seasons go by and the different foods go through our systems, it helps to keep the system, shall we say, clean and dynamic as opposed to static. Is that a fair assessment?
That is a fair assessment. And the fact is that certain foods are heavier, say, for example, in the fall and the winter, and that are available. And those foods actually provide the sustenance for keeping the body warm. And I mean, even for us, even though we have central heating and all of that kind of thing, we still do have, you know, the need when we step outside if it's cold at night to have a warmer body. In the summer, what we need are lighter foods. And that's when you'll find that most of the lighter, you know, the leafy greens and the tomatoes and other vegetables and fruits are growing. So it really is seasonal as far as that goes. Now, in California, we have the four seasons. We have one season, basically, with a little bit of colder weather and a little bit of, you know, hotter weather. But overall, we can get away with having a more diversified diet. But mm-hmm. if you live in the Northeast, which is where I'm from, you really felt the need. You crave things like soup and hearty soups, I'm mm-hmm. talking about. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the heavier vegetables and the squashes and that type of thing, because those provided the sustenance that kept you warm.
Yeah.
And you're stepping
during that particular time of the year. Yeah,
exactly.
Whereas we get into spring and summer, you want something lighter.
Exactly.
And so on and so on. So it is important for us to vary our diets, not only throughout a day, but throughout the year.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Because the body will function much better. Whereas if you're consuming the same thing day in and day out, you know, not necessarily for both breakfast, lunch, and dinner, if you have three meals, or say for dinner every night you have the same thing,
you're limiting the number of nutrients you're getting as well. And I mean, when I look at people, and I've looked at thousands of people's diets over the years, Richard, and I will tell you that the people who have like the mono kind of diet, you know, the same stuff every day for breakfast, the same thing for lunch, the same thing for dinner, they're the people who are more likely to become ill because they're not giving their body the plethora of nutrients that are available. You know, we keep hearing about the rainbow diet. There's a reason for that. Every particular color of vegetable or fruit or food in general, but we're talking most of the time of produce when we're mm-hmm. talking about this, they all have very different, a very different spectrum of nutrients, and you need all of them. So it might not be all in one, definitely not all in one day, and it may not be all in one week, but it'll definitely be over the course of a couple of months or 4 month period, you should be getting a wide variety of vegetables and fruits in your diet, as well as other things. I mean, you need a really well-balanced diet with a lot of diversification to be
mm-hmm.
healthy.
Mm-hmm. Well, it seems to me like this is sort of the groundwork for what we're going to continue talking about here on the program. And, of course, you have this work and you have a website as well that people can go to. If I'm correct, isn't it drmarilynjoyce.com?
Yep, drmarilynjoyce.com with a DR in front.
DR,
yeah.
All right. Don't put the dot in there because it'll mess up the internet.
It'll mess it up completely.
You thought the hackers were a problem back in October 2016? You just wait. You put that dot in there after that and you'll just create problems.
Yep.
That's another element, I think, of, and we're still in the information age. I mean, I remember working for a company back in the 90s that used the phrase that information is power.
Yeah.
And the what seems to be happening, though, is a lot of people are using information as power. In other words, they're trying to give out just enough or just the right information to get people to do certain things, to think certain ways, to be certain, mm-hmm. da 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 da. And one of the things that I find so fascinating is the process of vetting all of that, going through and trying to figure out, because when I first got on the computer and on the internet back in 94,
mm-hmm.
I was always told, don't believe anything you read on the internet, okay? Because they're just, most of it's wacko. Well, maybe the percentage is still wacko, but now there's a whole lot more.
Yes, there is.
How do we go through the process? Is there a technique that you have found? Is there a method? I mean, I'm thinking of one in particular. I'll put out in a little bit, but is there a method similar to like finding the right, the good stuff to eat? We've kind of talked about how to do that. And you might be 95%, maybe 99% successful. Okay.
Yeah.
And that 1% isn't going to kill you.
That's
okay? Right. And it's okay to have a fudge bar once in a while.
That's
or,
right.
You know, a piece
of apple.
Matter of
fact, it's good for the soul.
Exactly. The comfort food.
Yeah. Comfort food. Exactly.
That's a whole nother subject in that respect. But again, we're trying to give people the information to help them to keep going. I myself, when I was living in Phoenix and I would walk the streets, I would see a lot of these guys, these old guys, elderly gentlemen, walking around not only with canes, but hunched over. And I swore I was not going to become one of those guys. No way. Yeah. I was going to be the Hunchback of Notre Dame. I abhorred that concept.
Yeah.
So how do you go through the process of sifting through so much information? And certainly we could go to your website and we hope we can trust what we find there as well. But give us some guidelines.
Well, there's a few things here. One of the things, I want to mention this before it slips my mind to mention it, because I think that, you know, you had mentioned right at the very beginning, everything is energy. And one of the things that I studied was the whole aspect of how water changes when you just put a name or a word on the bottle and then fill the bottle with water. And it actually changed the molecular structure of that water just by having abundance or joy or love or peace on the bottle. The same thing is true if we were to pray, or whatever one wants to call it, over their food. I pray over my food, and I just thank the universe and God for the food that I'm about to eat and ask that it may bless my body and the bodies of anybody else that's eating with me at the time. And I really believe there is power in that, because there's a vibrational frequency with everything we do. So that's one of the things that we can do to change the molecular structure, let's say, of the food, even if it's not the best food on the planet. But the other thing about how to discern what's good and bad on the internet or out there in the information world is really to, one, look at the credentials of the person who is offering this information. Find out if their credentials are real. Find out how long they've been doing this research that they're doing. There's a lot of things, and if something sounds too good to be true, like if it's touted as a miracle food, don't buy into that, because there's no, I learned this going through that 5-year journey with cancer in the 80s, there are no magic bullets or miracle cures. I don't care what anybody says, and I say that very affirmatively. At the same time, I do believe you can have instant energy instantly if you know the strategies to use. However, that idea that there's miracle cures or magic bullets in anything out there, whether it's electrical frequencies or nutrition or food or supplements. And there's another thing I wanted to bring up, and it's a huge problem today, is the supplement industry, because so many people are rushing out and getting supplements to make up for what they're probably not getting in the food they're eating because of our soil, our water, and our air, and et cetera. However, when you buy supplements, you should be looking at them the same way you're looking at your food. What are the preservatives that are in there? I mean, if you can't read it, don't eat it. The same thing, if you can't read it, don't take the supplement. And the fact is, if it's a long list of ingredients, you definitely don't want that. You want something that's got specifically in it what you want. You know, I mean, 4 or 5 ingredients is max if it's something like bread or something that's, you know, that's a packaged processed food. And the same thing true with supplements. I can't tell you the number of so-called top supplement companies that are using corn. And all, if it doesn't say GMO free, you know darn well it's not GMO free. Same thing with wheat. Same thing with soy. They're using soy oil. They're using safflower oil. They're using whatever oil they're using. And it's not GMO free, and it's not organic. So what are you getting? And,
you know,
big
and
problem.
My big bugaboo, of course, is soft drinks.
And yes.
Has been for decades. Matter of fact, when I was bicycling all over Phoenix, I actually created this cup holder that would actually hold a large plastic cup with a lid that I could go into the convenience store and refill for X number, you know, a dollar, whatever.
Right.
And it was sitting right there, and I could take a drink while I'm pedaling away and so forth. And I started, I start looking at that in the same way that I look at bicyclists while they're smoking.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going, what's the point? You know?
Yeah.
I don't, well, now, most people aren't necessarily bicycling for exercise per se,
right.
just getting from point A to point B. But it's just, it's like you're bicycling and you're smoking. Okay. You know, to me, there's a paradox there.
Absolutely. I mean, you might be getting, you might at least be counteracting some of the negativity of that particular habit. But I agree with you. I mean, if you're going to be doing something that's healthy, let's try to aim for as much as possible. I guess you'd Yoda, is it Yoda said, don't try, just do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't try, just do.
Just do. So, you know, the point is we really have to start taking responsibility. When we look at the health of our nation, and we are, Americans used to have a really high standard of health.
Mm-hmm.
Not now. We are one of the lower on the totem poles in the world.
But was it a standard of health that we were conscious of? Or it's just that the foods hadn't become overly processed.
Absolutely.
And we were already eating healthfully.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's really, that was the whole thing. Food started changing basically in the 50s and 60s when we started to introduce TV dinners.
Right.
Right? And the TV dinners back then, though, did not have a whole long list of ingredients like
right.
they do now. It's
right.
like, you need a whole thing, a book to read it.
Mm-hmm.
So the thing is that was really when the degradation started, I think, of our diet. And then what happened was we became a supersized nation. Went to a restaurant, it was supersized meals, supersized buffets. And then you'd look at the people that were at the buffet and you'd think, I don't think I'm going to be eating here too often.
Well, I remember Thanksgivings. Year after year, I would load up a plate. And then I would go back for more, and of course I was stuffed. I don't do that. I haven't done that for 15 or 20 years.
Good.
Just simply because I just got tired of feeling so uncomfortable. And I thought, you know, if I take a little of everything or almost everything, mm-hmm. just little pieces of this and that and the other, and then just enjoy that. And if I want to go back for more, fine. But
exactly.
not to the point where you know, some people literally can't get out of their chair because they're just so they're fatigued. Not only from the process of eating, but also now there's the digestion that's going to go on for hours.
Well, the highest rate of heart attacks is Thanksgiving, Christmas, and New Year's.
Mm.
And I think also to the big game, what is it, the Rose Bowl or whatever football game that happens.
Oh, yeah.
In the beginning of the new year.
Yeah,
I'm
yeah.
not a big football person,
right.
but apparently that's the other Super Bowl. That's it, the Super Bowl.
Oh, the Super Bowl, yeah.
Yeah. So those are the four times in the year. And what do people do on those four times?
It might as well be Thanksgiving.
Way too much. Yeah, exactly. And so that's one of the things for sure. We eat too much and then we actually put our body in jeopardy, especially our cardiovascular system.
Yeah.
And the other aspect of it is that what most people don't realize, but if they test it, and my patients do test it after they've been with me for a little while, is you do not taste the food that you're putting into your mouth after the first couple of bites. So, for example, with desserts, if you really watch what you were doing, you take the first couple of bites and you can really taste it. You savor it.
Mm.
But after that, you're just eating it because it's there and it tastes good, you know, whatever. Yeah. Your memory tells you it's good.
My wife and I basically will now buy one order of something and split it.
Yeah, exactly. Best way to go.
You know.
Absolutely.
You know, and we will do the comfort food every once in a while.
Oh, yes.
We'll come down off the hill. We'll go to McConnell's ice cream and, you know, and enjoy that. And again, it's okay, but it's not, in a sense, a regular part
right.
of the diet.
It's a treat.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
A treat. The problem we have today, Richard, is that our kids, for example, are eating party food three times a day.
Yeah.
We used to have, you know, a party and have French fries and a hamburger
mm-hmm.
or pizza.
Yeah.
You know, it was like an either or,
mm-hmm.
and it was once in a while.
Yeah.
Today, that's breakfast, lunches, Pop-Tarts for breakfast with soda, lunches, French fries and hamburgers,
mm-hmm.
and dinner is pizza on the run because everybody's tired and they're just going to grab something on the way home.
Exactly. Yeah.
Really
We're going to also talk here when we get back from our break about the five keys to unlimited energy and vitality. And by the way, there is a wonderful little bonus if you pick up a copy of the book. It is Vitality for Life Teleseminar. Or I guess that's how they're referring to them now. It's a series that's available, and the details are within the book. So you'll need to pick up a copy of the book to take part in that. We'll be back with more with our special guest here in studio, Dr. Marilyn Joyce. Again, the author of the book Instant Energy, and the website is drmarilynjoyce.com. That's DR without the period. Stay tuned. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. And I have to say, Marilyn, that is one of the things that bothers me more than anything else when we go out to eat. In a lot of restaurants, the menu is 2 and 3 and 4 and 5 pages long. Now, I feel for the cook.
Yes.
Because he's got to know, he or she's got to know how to cook
exactly.
All of that. But it's like, how do you know what to, you know, it's like, and I'm not saying that they should be pared down to 2 items.
Right.
But come on, let's try to keep it a little simpler. And to that end, what about this aspect when one is cooking? And I've watched a lot of these contestant type cooking shows like MasterChef and mm-hmm. MasterChef Junior with Gordon Ramsay, and they're always talking about in addition to trying to raise whatever dish you're making to a higher level for, you know, like the 5 Michelin star restaurant kind of thing,
right,
or whatever, keeping it simple.
Yes.
You don't need to throw 15 different ingredients into one dish.
That's
and
right.
And when I speak of ingredients, it's not sometimes it's the seasonings as well.
Yeah.
Because now you don't know what you're tasting, and you can't really taste any individual flavor because it's all so mixed up.
It's true.
And then there's the whole aspect when you're cooking, and again, I don't do this. I'm not a cook. My wife is, of not mixing everything all at once.
Yeah.
There are certain dishes where she'll prepare this thing over here and this thing over here, mm-hmm. but she won't mix the two until we're ready to eat.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing. So let's talk a little bit about food preparation and its benefits to us in that regard.
Well, the less ingredients, the better, you know, because one, you want the food to be as close to its natural form as possible. So once, if we have to doctor the food up, that's because the food has no flavor to begin with.
Could you pass the ketchup, please?
Yeah, right, exactly. So, you know, really, truly, it boils down to the less ingredients, the better. There was actually a book written many years ago called The One Bowl Diet. And basically what it was saying was you should only eat 1 or 2 foods at one time. So, for example, maybe you're going to have rice and beans right now. And then maybe later in the day, you're going to have some lettuce with some tomatoes. Mm-hmm. And maybe later, you're going to have some veggies cut up with some hummus. You know, but it's keeping it really simple because the body can't digest all of those different foods. This is why we have so many people with so many digestive and gastric problems today, because they're getting way too many, they're taking way too many different things in at the same time. And the body just doesn't know how to work with that. It can digest 2, maybe 3 or 4 foods at one meal, but that's about it, max. And so it really is about limiting what you're taking in at any one time and spreading it out throughout the day so that your body has time to assimilate all of it.
Is the concept of 3 meals a day still a valid one, or is, in a manner of speaking, grazing or multiple small meals throughout the day a better course along the lines of what you just described?
Well, you know, there's a lot of controversy over that, and there's a few reasons for that. One thing that, you know, when you're grazing all day, so I don't believe in grazing all day, because what you're doing then is you're never giving your body time to rest. And so the body does need time in between meals and snacks to rest. What I find for most people is if they have 3 meals and 1 to 2 snacks a day, that's good. And actually, none of those meals should be really big. We often hear about eating breakfast like a king or a queen, lunch like a prince or princess, and dinner like a pauper. And in many respects, I believe that to be the best way to eat, because where I'm from, I'm a Scots girl from a wee place called Auchtermuchty in Scotland, and my grandparents
part of one of my favorite parts of the world.
Yeah, oh, I love Scotland.
Mine is Ireland across the Irish Sea, but still the same general area.
It's
so.
Yep, it's all
it's good
beautiful.
To know you.
Ah, it's good to know you too.
But about these multiple meals.
Yeah.
The breaking of the fast, obviously.
Yep. Break fast is a good word. You're
but
breaking.
But dinner, you don't want to have heavy because you're getting ready to slow down,
go to sleep.
Lie down.
Yep.
This, to me, is where the biggest problem for people, and I discovered this myself, and I knew the solution. I did not take a purple pill for it. When you eat a large meal and the later you eat, regardless of size, into the evening before you go to bed, I will bet you 9 times out of 10, you have what they call that, I can't think of the name of it now. I can't.
Heartburn?
Well, it's heartburn, but it's also
acid reflux.
Thank you.
Acid reflux, yeah.
I used to have it. And every once in a while I will get it because we had that dessert, even though it was a small one, just a little too close to bedtime.
Yep, exactly. I always tell people, if you're going to have those kinds of things, have it when your body is best able to assimilate it. But the body, when you wake up, it's ready to break the food down, assimilate it, use it. But as the day goes on, the body starts to, it's moving towards rest time. So it's not as able to assimilate as much food. What I always recommend to people, and you know, the fact of the matter is, if you've got a weight issue, this is the surest way to get rid of it. Don't eat carbs after 4 o'clock in the afternoon. So in other words, have, you know, some protein at night. Now, maybe you're a vegan, so you might have legumes and quinoa, for example. But if you do eat meat, then and salad, of course, then if you eat meat or animal products, have a little bit of protein, simply prepared, no sauces or gravy or any of that stuff. And then on top of that, have a salad and some steamed vegetables. That's the ideal meal. Save your desserts for midday when you're at a business lunch or, you know, a weekend as a treat.
Mm-hmm.
But desserts at night are not a good idea unless it's a very small amount, like a chocolate-coated strawberry, if you've got an organic strawberry that's not irradiated. It's a great treat at night.
You keep taking us back there, are you?
Yeah.
That's all right. Now, you mentioned something that is, in my opinion, rather profound because it's something that they used to say that you know at least one person, maybe two people in your lifetime. But now I think it's grown to the point where, matter of fact, I was just at the dermatologist and he took some, what the heck is that cold gas, the nitrogen, and zapped a couple of spots on the top of my head and then scraped something off my side. For a biopsy, he said the things on top were precancerous, even though I wear a hat outside all the time now, right?
Mm-hmm.
But everybody's dealing with this in one form or another. Now, until I met my second wife, I knew nobody. And then she got cancer. Now, she's been free of it for 16 years, okay?
Yeah.
And a lot of what they were telling her didn't make sense to me. It's a rare form, 70% recurrence if you stop your chemo. And I'm going, okay, wait a minute. And then I found out, only about 1,300 women have had this rare form of fallopian tube cancer. I said, well, wait a minute. Then I want all of the information on the diets and the lifestyles of the 70 who had the recurrence and then the 30 who didn't.
Right.
I want to know what they did and didn't do. You know, and of course, obviously, I'm never going to get that. But the point was, if it's so rare, how can you be 100% certain that this is going to happen, A? And B, how can you be 100% certain that that's what this is?
Yeah.
You know?
And on and on.
Because you have been through that ringer.
Yeah, I have been. I mean, in 1989, I was literally at the bottom of the barrel, 88 pounds in a wheelchair, given less than 2 weeks to live.
Stage four?
Stage four uterine cancer. And I had had melanoma, but we caught it very early stage.
Right.
So I'd gone through two bouts with that, but the third bout of uterine cancer, which had been misdiagnosed for some time, actually, even though I complained about pain, they told me it was PMS, go home and stop complaining, you know, because I was young.
Yeah.
But the point
what
is,
do you know?
Yeah, I'm still young, just
yes,
different
you
number, you know. But the point is that really, truly, when it comes down to it with your diet and your lifestyle, the people who do the best. And I've seen this with thousands of patients over the years, Richard. The people who do the best after the journey of cancer are the people who change their diet and lifestyle entirely. That's what Instant Energy is about. It's not about chemo and radiation. It's about taking charge of your body, mind, and spirit through doing whole person strategies. You know, it's the food is important, but I've known people to have a great diet but a really crappy attitude, and they have not been around to talk about it. I've had other people who've had a great attitude and not such a great diet, better than most, but not perfect, and they're still here. So it really boils down to, you know, the whole person approach, doing the best you can, blessing your food, and really changing your attitude at every given moment. If you're in a bad funk, stress stops the flow.
Mm-hmm.
It stops everything in your body. So the first thing you have to do is stop that stress in its tracks right away.
I've also heard, too, and this, of course, goes for anybody, whether you have cancer or not, sugar is a major factor
yes.
as well.
Yeah, cancer is a sugar feeder. And now the research is there. I remember when we first used to talk about that at the Cancer Treatment Centers of America, we could show them the research, but there wasn't much there to show. But it was very valid. Today, there's just so much research that shows that the cancer cells will go for that sugar first. So, for example, this is what we found with our patients, is that when a patient went through chemotherapy, all of a sudden they were craving sugar because we never gave it to them in the hospital, the cancer treatment centers. I just wouldn't allow it. They would get natural things like fruit and fruit sorbet and stuff like that. But anyway, they would start craving the sugar, and people would bring them chocolates and candy and whatever, cupcakes and whatever. What happened was that they came back, the cancer came back with a vengeance, and they were back in the hospital no better the next month than they were the month before.
Jeez.
But the patients who got it and refused to indulge in the sugar after their chemotherapy treatments, mm-hmm. they were the ones who are still here today, or many of them anyway, unless they were old to begin with.
Right, right.
Right? But that's the truth. The truth of what we saw was that people literally did really well when they avoided sugar. And I'm going to tell you that, you know, carrot juice is one of the worst things you can do as well.
Oh.
It's not just about fruit and vegetables and candy and whatever. It's about really looking at carrot juice, because you're removing the fiber. And all you're doing is drinking that sugar juice instead of eating the carrot with all the fiber in it as well. That's the problem with juicing in general.
I see. Obviously the liquid that you're extracting was put together with the flesh
Absolutely.
Of the fruit or vegetable.
And they all work synergistically. All those nutrients
wow.
work synergistically. That's why I've always been a whole food and whole
wow.
food juice advocate, like a Vitamix machine or a BlendTec or something, where you are literally throwing the whole item in and you're getting everything in there.
Well, we kind of did we circumvented that a little bit. We have one year we had a loquat tree that produced a lot of fruit. So I thought, you know, and they tasted really good right off the tree. So I thought, well, this would be really good juiced, you know. So I went through the process of cutting them open, moving the seed and so forth, throwing them all in the juicer, and made the juice, which was fabulous. And at that time, we had chickens. So I gave the pulp to the chickens,
uh-huh.
who gave it back to us through the egg.
Right.
So, I mean, you know, we, we found a way, sort of. But when they're originally combined, when they're naturally combined as is,
yes.
that's what you want. And
that's
you know what?
The synergistic
I hadn't,
effect.
You know what? I hadn't really made that connection. I always figured, you know what? That just seems like a great idea to have a juicer to extract the juicer and drink it.
Yeah.
And so, and of course, we don't have the chickens anymore. So now the fiber
it's just
goes
thrown
to waste.
Out.
Yeah. Or you put it in your compost, but still, it's the combination as again the juice, the liquid, and the solid. That is part of the process that your body needs in order to sustain itself.
The food was created in a whole food form.
Yeah.
You know,
wow.
it's...
Gee, and yet, boy, they make it so sound so appealing and appropriate to juice things, you know, and that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah, and there's been so many people who've, you know, pseudo-health practitioners and no biochemistry background in their background, and they're telling people that, oh, the juice is the fastest way to get the nutrients into your body. The problem is that you're missing 35 to 45% of all the nutrients that were in that food to begin with, and they all work synergistically together.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. I wish I had put that together years ago. I mean, we don't juice hardly at all. Now, orange, for example, we got an orange tree back in our home in Phoenix, and I always loved, we'd pull them all down, you know, and I'd go in the garage and I'd set up my assembly line and I would go juice them all because you don't eat the peel.
Right. Okay. That's right.
So that's a little different.
Exactly.
But when you are running it through a juicer, that's a whole different thing.
Very different thing.
Talk to us about the five keys to unlimited energy and vitality. Now, when you say unlimited, hey, we're all energy.
Yeah.
We're made up of energy. We are energy and so on and so forth. So how do we sort of, and I say this euphemistically, clean out the conduit to get that energy flowing again?
Well, that's a really great question because, for one thing, we do need to detox the body in order to begin to really assimilate everything, you know, to break it down and metabolize and assimilate whatever we take into our body. So I always try to start my clients and patients, if they're able to, if they're not already compromised to a huge extent by the time they come to me, I try to start them on a detox program, which I have a whole chapter of in Instant Energy. But Instant Energy, the word energy is actually an acronym for the five keys that I learned way back in India in 1970, 71, 72. However,
you and the Beatles.
Yeah, me and the Beatles. You know, I had to follow them around the world. So, but when I learned it in India, it was a all-day, time-consuming process. What I learned was that in our culture, nobody's going to spend all day. Nobody has all day to do it. And if you're sick with an illness such as cancer, or you're a caregiver of someone who's ill or getting old or has Alzheimer's, you do not have time and energy to spend a lot of time. So I had to come up with five-minute strategies, of which there's hundreds of in Instant Energy. But there are five keys through which those strategies are used. And the five keys are, first of all, exhale fully first. That's the first E in energy. And why is that so important? If you don't breathe, you die. And most people don't know how to breathe properly. If you don't fully exhale before you inhale, you can't fully inhale. So I teach people to fully exhale so that when they're breathing, they're getting the maximum amount of oxygen when they're breathing, which is really key because cancer cells, for example, don't thrive well in an oxygenated environment. So that's the E. The N is nutrition excellence daily, and I always emphasize not Monday morning, not New Year's Day, but every day, you know, and again, making room for treats every once in a while as well. I really believe in having the soul fulfilled as well. So that's the N. The second E is exercise for cellular rejuvenation. Most people think if they just go out and run around the block, that's good exercise, but it's not. You need to get right into the cell through things like rhythmically bouncing on an exercise ball or bouncing on on a trampoline, a mini trampoline or a big trampoline. You know, because that detoxes the lymphatic system at the same time as building your muscles and cleaning your system out. Then we come to the R, the big thing that most Americans especially do not do, and that is rest, relax, and rejuvenate. All you need with any of these is 5 minutes at a time. And then the next part of it is gratitude attitude. And that was the big one I learned when I was going through the cancer journey. I did not have gratitude for anything. I was angry. I was, you know, bitter that I was sick and told I didn't have any life left in me. But thank you to the universe, I'm still here.
Plenty of life
to talk about it, you know.
Plenty of life here on the program.
Yeah, lots of energy today. But the point is that if you don't have gratitude, you know, it's that whole concept of what you focus on expands. And if you are focused on the negative, you get more of it. Yeah. We all know that. You know, you stump your toe in the morning, you drop the pot of coffee, and the rest of your day is disaster. But if you get up instead and smile.
Yeah.
And, you know, and okay, you stub your toe, but you laugh about it instead of getting upset. Then what you focus on expands. And when you focus on what you're grateful for, you get more of that.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's my story was a really key one for me and for my clients is that the first day I wrote gratitudes, I couldn't think of anything to write. So I wrote the same thing 5 times.
Mm-hmm.
By the end of a month, I wrote 138 different gratitudes.
Oh, wow.
In one day.
Yeah.
And they were all different. And so today I'm alive and well. What was that about? Well, obviously my food is healthy, but most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
But definitely I do the gratitude journal and I do gratitude walks. I teach gratitude classes, you know, so I'm always in that space. So that, and then the why is your 5 keys because I, like I said, I have hundreds of strategies in the book, but you're not going to do them all.
Yeah.
You're going to say, oh, no, I don't want to do that. So we find the ones that you will do and
yeah.
meet you where you're at.
And yeah. that's what we do with this program is we bring people on the program who share their story, the information that they have, what they've discovered, what they've found, what's working for them, put it there on the smorgasbord table.
Right.
And invite the listeners to come and partake.
Exactly.
We're not asking you to eat everything, like at Thanksgiving, where
yes.
you grab a lot of everything and
right.
pile it all on the plate and then walk away stuffed
yep.
and unsatisfied.
Yeah.
We don't want you to take what doesn't resonate with you.
Exactly.
Only take what works for you. And that, to me, is extremely important. And I, as you were, you know, I'm, you were saying that that energy was as an acronym for the 5 keys, and I'm going, well, but there are 6 letters there.
I know. That's
you,
why I always...
Why is...
For your 5 keys, I know it was amazing because it was one of those nights when I went to bed thinking the book was done and I didn't have it as an acronym and I woke up 2 hours later, that's 4 o'clock in the morning, I thought I was done, 6 o'clock in the morning on Thanksgiving Day, I wake up and it's like, an acronym. Oh, no, I don't even want to think about this. I just want to sleep and enjoy the day.
Yeah.
I couldn't. And when I sat down and wrote it out, I realized it was my assistant at the time kept saying to me, that is just uncanny how it fits with everything that you teach.
You know, if you were to anagram it, you could also say greeny. G-R-E-E-N-Y. But that instant greenie, what in the world does that mean? So instant energy is so much better.
Yeah, right.
So
it
much
works,
better.
It works.
It's just, it's you've already done it. We don't need to go any further with that.
Greenie would be a good name for a book, though. It would be very catchy.
Just give me a little acknowledgement there at the bottom
will,
of the last
absolutely.
Page there. You know, yeah,
definitely, Richard.
This is, it's what's really kind of funny, but also very serious about all of this, is that, my God, it's so simple.
Yes, it is.
It's like, how hard do we have to make it hard for people to do it? You know, that's what it seems like.
Yeah, it's people like to complicate things.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's really hard for them to get their mind around the fact that the simpler it is, the better. I mean, I was blessed that I had grandparents who grew all their own food. They lived to 97 years of age, both my grandparents on my mom's side. Neither died of any major illness. They just decided the time had come to leave, and that at 97, they each left in perfect health by choice.
They both left at their ages of 97?
Yeah, there was 10 years difference between them.
Wow.
And so my granddad went first, and my grandmother hung out for another 10 years and kind of watched over the family.
Wow.
She was a true matriarch.
Mm.
And, yeah, it's hard for me to believe that I'm the matriarch of the family now. You know, it's just...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I have to say that a few years back, one of my sister's daughters gave birth, and I became a great uncle. But that wasn't the big deal. It was that it then made my parents great grandparents.
Yes.
And I'm going, wait a minute, Mom and Dad are... I can understand grandparents, but I can't wrap my head around great-grandparents.
I know.
It's just, it's incredible. But they're having a blast raising this kid, and they daycare for
wow.
mom and dad, for the parents. Yeah, which is incredible. I mean, here they are, and I know that they raised the daughter a little bit, you know,
yeah.
they oversaw that, and also my other sister's 2 kids. But now they're doing the same thing for, so now you have this great-grandbaby who is getting what I consider to be some of the greatest experience
yes.
of her life, of getting to know the fourth generation out
yes.
of the family.
That's fantastic.
You know, and this is part of, I think, what has been lost over the decades in our society particularly, is that we have put our folks over 60 somewhere else.
Yes.
You know, the children are to be be seen and not heard, and the elderly are almost in the same category because
yeah.
you go from childhood to adulthood back to childhood, and we just can't deal with mom and dad like this, and so that we're going to put them in a home, and they'll die eventually. We know that, and that's just part of life. And but we have our lives we have to live, and it's like, wait a minute. But then this kind of goes back to the interview I actually had with them in asking them if they sacrificed anything in having a big family and having a family of six.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, absolutely not. As a matter of fact, that's what we wanted.
Yeah.
And so when you choose what you want.
Yes.
Okay. There is no sacrifice. The things that come along, the pluses and the minuses,
yeah.
the challenges and the joys and all of that, that's just part of the package that you bought into.
Yeah.
Okay, that you signed on for, and it's okay.
Yes.
You know?
It's all, again, it's all about attitude.
Yeah.
You know, what kind of attitude are you going to have for this? Are you going to be distressed by it, or are you going to enjoy it? You know, we can change our perspective or our belief or our ideas in an instant if we choose to. And if we're going through that whole, I know this one couple who ended up taking on their own grandchildren as their own children due to, you know, the mother being a substance abuser.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of them being upset about it, they embraced it. And they have fun with it. And in fact, it's kept them young, you know. So it's about attitude, you know. And for they're a good example for me to really look at, because I realize how quickly you can change your perspective and from a negative to a positive.
I've heard it said, and even in this day and age, in the 21st century, it's even faster, that it is as easy to change your perspective as it is to change the channel on the TV. And now it's just the push of a button. It's instantaneous. You don't have
yeah.
to get up and walk over and click, click,
right.
click. It's just a push of the button. And it literally is. That
it really
easy
is.
To change your perspective.
It's a choice.
Yeah. I started to take a look at a few years back, I had problems with other drivers, you know, and I don't want to say that it was road rage, but I certainly wasn't real happy with some of
right.
the things that people were doing. And so someone said to me once, they said, you know, you do realize that so-and-so in that car over there that just did thus and such that has upset you did not get up this morning and say, let's get Richard.
Right.
Okay. It wasn't personal any more than you're maybe unconsciously doing something that he upset them was personal. You didn't get up this morning and say, let's get Bill
right.
or Gene.
Exactly.
And then another layer on that was looking at these folks out there who are in their little four-wheel, six-wheel vehicles, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
We're all students. We're
yes.
all in school.
Absolutely.
We're all just going through our lessons.
Yeah.
And that has helped even more to diffuse that whole energy.
Yeah, absolutely.
And changing perspective.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the perfect questions to ask yourself. If you're ever going into a funk, what's the lesson here for me?
Yeah.
What am I supposed to be getting from this?
Not what are they doing.
Right.
It has nothing to do with outside.
Yeah, I mean, what is it, Don Miguel Ruiz, in his book, The Four Agreements,
mm-hmm.
he talked about don't take anything personally. I mean, it's like,
yeah.
I think it's the second agreement. That was the one that really hit me like a ton of bricks, because I grew up where I did take everything personally. It was pretty personal in my home as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
So I took it personally. And as I got older, I realized most people they're not even thinking about me.
Yeah.
Their whole life is about them right now.
Which is sort of the problem. They're not thinking.
Right. They're not
only
thinking,
they're not thinking about me, they're just not thinking.
Not thinking, yeah.
But you still have to get to that place that you're talking about.
Yeah. What's the lesson here? What can I learn from this? You know, it's always, you know, I remember Tony Robbins saying in, I think it was Life Mastery, ask a better question, you get a better answer. You know, so if it's a victim question, you're going to get victim stuff.
Yeah.
But if it's a question of, you know, how can I take action here? What can I do to change the situation?
Yeah.
You know, where do I need to go with this? Then it changes everything. It changes your outcome from negative to positive overnight.
And one of the phrases that was very frustrating, not only for me, but for others, when I was going through some of these personal growth programs back in the 80s and 90s, that most people were going through at that time.
Right.
the statement when people were getting frustrated and they really were getting challenged and pushed and so forth, the statement was made to them and to all of us at the same time, you are where you want to be because if you didn't want to be here, you wouldn't be.
That's right.
Ergo, you must want to be here.
Yeah.
Dealing with what you're dealing with and face to face with, you know, what, you know, what's happening.
Yeah.
So,
absolutely.
And that applies every moment of every day.
It's so true.
Yeah.
So true. I mean, it's, you know, I think a lot of times when we find ourselves faced with the challenges that we're faced with throughout our lives, when we reflect back, it was our soul's journey. It was part of what the soul required to get to the next level.
Yeah.
And when you can look at it from that perspective, it changes everything. I think Louise Hay was, she just had her 90th birthday. And,
amazing.
You know, you can heal your life. That woman was a prime example of someone who literally walked that walk. You know, and really started asking those questions and changing the way that we look at our body, you know, our mind and body relationship here. And it's all about changing that.
And then even taking a look at the outer world and asking the question, what am I manifesting within me that maybe not directly is creating that out there? Whether it's the struggle and the strife, whether it's a hurricane, whether it's an earthquake, whether it's flooding, whether it's drought, you know. And I look at, for example, California dealing with this 6-year, potentially 7-year drought.
I know.
Is a drought, to me, is a representation of an attitude of lack. Mm-hmm. There isn't enough, and yet there is. There's more than enough of everything.
Exactly.
People talk about fresh water. Oh, please, there's more than enough fresh water. But are we willing to do what it takes to capture it?
Exactly.
And that doesn't necessarily mean cutting and floating icebergs down from the north or up from the south. There
That's
are other
right.
ways of doing it.
That's true.
It's how far are you willing to go to put yourself where you really want to be? I mean, really want to be.
Yeah.
Not just where you find yourself in the frustration saying, all right, so I know this is where I want to be because if I didn't want to be here, I would be somewhere else. Choosing, which is what this program is all about, choices.
Yep.
And we're trying to give people those choices.
Absolutely. You know, as you were saying that, I was thinking about the water on the Galapagos Islands. Years ago when I went there, I ended up spending about a month and a half there.
Oh, wow.
And it was out of this world. But, you know, one of their issues had been water. It was all salt water. But they didn't see it as a problem. They just got the equipment that they needed. And they filtered their water, and they had fresh, clean water from the ocean, minus the salt.
Yeah.
You know, so there are systems and processes for everything.
Yeah.
Our problem is we close the door. It can't be done, or, you know, we don't know
how.
It's
too expensive is the excuse I hear over over. In the 70s when solar was coming online, and I was living in Arizona, of course, in Phoenix.
Right.
Hearing about this, and they, well, yeah, we could put money, but it's just too expensive.
Exactly.
And you know how much more expensive it's going to be in the 80s and in the 90s?
Exactly.
And so forth. The same thing with we have this desal plant here in Santa Barbara, you know. And during the last drought, they built it, and it went online, and it started raining. And they shut it down.
Oh.
And they sold parts to somebody else, and now they're refurbishing it at millions and millions of dollars.
Exactly.
And the rains look like they're coming, and you know, hopefully we're having, you know, maybe at least the beginnings of coming out of this dry spell.
I hope so.
But, you know, when we were going through a period in the first 5 years that I was living here in Santa Barbara, we had plenty of rain, right?
Yes.
Okay. And then I'm hearing about all these other places. I remember hearing about the fires in Australia and the droughts in this part of the world and that part of the, and I thought, hey, you know what? And our turn's coming. You know, our turn is, everybody gets a turn.
Everybody gets a turn. And it's, again, it's not what happens to us, it's how we relate to what happens to us.
Exactly.
And if we relate to it from a positive place, you know, an optimistic place, we'll come up with solutions.
Yeah.
Humankind has done that forever.
Yeah.
When something is gone, we find something else.
Yeah.
Where one door closes, another one opens. That's the only way we can really live a positive lifestyle.
And it's up to us as individuals. There
yes.
is no system.
Right.
There is no institution that's going to do it.
Exactly.
Because it can't.
That's right.
You know?
It's our choice. I mean, you know, one of the first things I learned when I was doing all these personal growth things was choice. You have a choice, and you can make a decision right now.
Yeah.
And I think often, too often, our school system isn't teaching kids this. It's teaching them that this is the way it is, and of course, everything is rote. What we need to do is be teaching kids to have a mind of their own and make choices and decisions all the way through their lives from very young.
And unfortunately, we aren't teaching them that.
No, we're not.
We're teaching them what to think instead of how.
That's it, exactly.
Yeah. And unfortunately, a lot of the institutions, the last thing they want is thinking people.
That's right. Dumb them down.
And then you will consume whatever we tell you to consume. Mm-hmm. You will take in the information that we want you to take in. And as dangerous as the internet might be at sometimes, I would rather have it open source as it is.
Me too.
Than have any kind of governing body telling us. I mean, we already have it in other countries. You hear about how different countries of a repressive nature, they will limit the websites that you can go to.
That's
in some
right.
countries, you can only go to one.
Yep.
And that's the only place that you're going to be allowed to go. And I often wonder, how in the world can they do that? But it can be done.
Yeah, and that could happen here if we're not, you know, watchful of this and, you know, rallying to prevent it.
Yeah. Instant Energy, 5 Keys to Unlimited Energy and Vitality. My guest is Dr. Marilyn Joyce. Any relation to James?
No, I wish.
Well, I want to thank you so much for coming in studio. I don't have to extend the invitation because you're already here.
I know. It's fun.
But
I love it.
We would love to have you back again if you're in the area to continue this conversation. And before we let you go, I have 3 final questions for you that I ask my guests.
Okay.
And again, I'm greatly appreciative of the fact that you're here in Santa Barbara with us. First question is, who is Marilyn Joyce?
Who is Marilyn Joyce? Marilyn Joyce is a universal soul with a universal mission who wants to see this earth working in harmony for peace and the expression of compassion, love, and respect for all that exists,
mm-hmm.
whether it's humans or animals. And I say that's really it in a nutshell. I'm the catalyst for global peace. That's my term now.
And I'm going to ask this question, though you've probably answered it throughout the program. What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing now?
Oh, wow. Loaded question. You know, Richard, what I want to achieve is, again, that I'm a connector. I want to bring people together in whatever form of unity that can be. And I know that, you know, I'm not talking about destroying all the borders and everything. The world's not ready for that yet. But I do see that as we come together and with respect for each other, we can have a much greater experience of compassion and caring and nurturing, and we can make the world a better place. If we're all working together for a better world, it'll happen. If we're all if we have this divide and conquer going on like it has been forever, and especially recently, we've got a problem. So, mm-hmm. you know, it's really about, I want to see the world come together in peace, compassion, respect.
What is your life's purpose?
My life's purpose is to travel around this globe and interview people and ask them the question, what matters now after they've lost everything that they thought was important to them? what matters now? Because I think all of us come to that place in our lives where we ask that question. I was shocked that there are people as young as 20 years old and 15 years old asking that question today. So, you know, and I'm getting all these responses on my journey of 1,000 days where young and old alike are coming in and telling me their stories. And I think that when we can come together with a story like that, it brings us together because we realize we're all the same deep down inside. We all want the same things: love, compassion, respect.
Now, I wish no ill will on myself, mind you, but there are times when I wonder how I would respond to the loss of all worldly possessions. In other words, the place where I live, if it were washed away by torrential rains or burned out by a fire. And there are a lot of people who have had that happen.
Absolutely.
To them, who are asking that question, what
yes.
now?
Yes, they are.
And of course, you know, you hear the phrase quite often that, well, I lost all the stuff, but at least I and my family and my animals are alive. We're
yep.
all safe. And that's wonderful. We've collected a lot of stuff over our individual lives. And there are people who have storage units filled with all of this stuff that they
yeah.
haven't seen. They make the monthly payments, but they haven't seen their stuff in years.
And they probably never will. That's the thing, you know.
Yeah.
I was one of those, Richard. I had a lot of beautiful things. And I will tell you that somebody asked me the other day how I'm feeling now that I've just gave away 5 large bags of clothing mm-hmm. to the battered women's shelters. I've given away every piece of furniture I owned, sold a few things for a little bit of money, but not much.
Mm-hmm.
Most of it given away.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like I feel like I'm on a balloon ride and all the stuff is being thrown over the side and the balloon is going up and I'm just rising into the heavens.
So I'm assuming you still have a central address and home base.
Well, sort of. You know, my friends tell me that I'm not homeless, I'm multi-homed. So,
which is not a bad thing.
It's a
really
wonderful
not.
Thing. Yeah, it's a wonderful thing.
Because
that's
what community's about.
Yeah, and
that
that's
respect.
The thing that I'm learning. I mean, it's like as I go through this process, I realize, you know, all those years when I had people who used to come and stay with me, and I loved it. It was like,
yeah.
yay, company. And now I'm the company for other people, you know, and I'm good company, they tell me. So, and they're good company, so it works.
Yeah.
And, you know, when the time is, should the day ever come where I want to have a permanent place again, I'll do it. You
yeah.
know, I've done it 3 times in my life. But
and the
this
door
time,
will open. And
yeah, yeah, exactly.
And I'm kind of the same way, especially in regards to, for example, giving people rides. When I was growing up until I was 38, actually 36, I either bicycled everywhere or people would give me rides here and there and everywhere. And so when I was able to drive finally at the age of 38, I said, you know, that when I can, I'm going to give people a lift here to this place and that and the other, because
yeah.
that was something that was given to me. And I was always greatly appreciative of that. So, yeah, it's one of those things where you pay no matter where you live. You
That's
are
right.
either going to pay rent, you're going to pay mortgage, but you pay.
Absolutely.
There's always that exchange, right?
Yep.
So my thinking is that with your experience of being multi-homed, as it were,
yes.
I think about the prospects of living in a motorhome.
Oh, yes. Or a tiny home.
I've seen those
that,
two.
Yeah.
For me, I'm thinking those might be a little too small for me. I would rather have like a 30-foot
right.
motorhome that I can travel in
yes.
and move about in. I don't want to haul my home behind me. I'd like to have my home part of what have you.
Right.
And then a small little studio. We take the show on the road.
Yep.
And we do kind of like what you're talking about. We interview people who are making a difference.
We'll meet
in the
along
world.
The way.
I'm sure we will. Believe it or not, I've already mapped out it is absolutely possible to actually circumnavigate the globe in the RV, with only a couple of exceptions. I would start at the tip of South America,
uh-huh.
work my way up through South America and the various countries, into Central, North America, and in the wintertime across the Bering Strait, into Russia and China and all of the countries and India, over into the Middle East, down into Africa, back up into Europe. Take the channel to England and then a ferry with the motorhome to Ireland, where I would park it and stay. Okay?
Yes.
The only continent I would unfortunately have to find another way of getting to would be Australia.
Yes.
For the most part.
Yeah.
There aren't that many people in Antarctica, so that's okay. But, you know, can you imagine? I mean, there are 7.5, maybe close to 8 billion people.
I know.
And many of them are still asleep.
Yeah.
They aren't even aware that they could live a different life.
That's right.
And there are a lot of people like you and I who kind of had enough with the way that things have been. And we want something different.
Absolutely.
And we want something different for everyone.
Yes.
This is not an exclusive club.
No, you know. I agree. We're all in it together. We're all, you know, it's like the trees are all joined with the roots underneath the ground.
Yeah.
I figure we're all joined by universal roots. So.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that both our efforts and those of others will work towards, like I say, you know, bringing it about. I mean, I'm talking to people now who are saying, based on a lot of some of the things that we've even talked
right.
about of a negative nature, that, yeah, we've already crossed the tipping point. It's already over. And our extinction is all but certain, you know, because we have done so much damage to the planet. And it's so – and I say, well, you know, if we think of her as a living being, then just like our bodies will kick up the antibodies
yeah.
to take on whatever foreign invaders have entered – she will do the same thing, and she will basically rock and roll and shift and shake and shimmy and do what is necessary to right herself.
Yep,
and
absolutely.
All will be fine. Matter of fact, I was thinking about this in regards to, you know, those gyres, the big garbage gyres out in the
yes.
oceans. Well, those whirlpools have always been there, right?
Yeah.
They've always been there. And for what purpose? In a manner of speaking, to do just exactly what they're doing.
Yes.
So if we, and I know of some people, I've seen some videos of some people who have created some devices to start collecting this stuff
mm-hmm.
and actually grind it up and use it as insulation.
Wow.
Okay. So it actually becomes a moneymaker.
Right.
And then it cleans the oceans up. But the Earth has basically created these little whirlpools that have collected this stuff. Now, because it's so abundant.
Right.
Okay. We can see it from space.
Yes.
Okay. But it's not insurmountable. It can be brought down and we can
Absolutely.
Make the changes. It's just, are we willing to do it?
This is it. I mean, everything has got a purpose and it's all usable if we are willing to look for ways to use it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dr. Marilyn Joyce, I want to thank you so much for joining us here on the program. It's been a pleasure to chat with you for the past hour or so, and we do look forward to the time when you come back to Santa Barbara or we see you on the road.
Right,
and
absolutely.
We chat again.
Thank you so much, Richard. This has been wonderful.
And a reminder that it's Instant Energy, the title of the book, 5 Keys to Unlimited Energy and Vitality. The website is drmarilynjoyce.com. We will be linked to her website, and hopefully you too will also go there and check out the information that she has. Pick up a copy of the book, and there are some videos there and some other things that I think will be of help to you. And again, if it resonates with you, then run with it. We certainly encourage you to do that. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to Lal.